Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big day in national sports today. The regular season for Major League Baseball has somehow officially and unofficially begun. The NCAA tournament got started 20, 30 minutes ago, something like that. So it's a big day. A lot to get to on tonight's program. Huge news in college basketball head coaching circles, especially for yours truly, because there are some ramifications for what it means for the future of the Iowa men's basketball head coaching job. The All-American teams for men's Division I college basketball have been announced, and so many other things to get to, including Aaron Rodgers has people upset. I'm shocked. I am absolutely floored to hear that Aaron Rodgers is doing something that is upsetting people, that is so outside of his character. I'm going to sit and let that joke breathe for a second. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight's show is JT Noah. We're with you for the next 3 hours. We'll be here till 9 p.m. tonight. No guests lined up for the show this evening. However, we will replay an interview that we had with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. We talked with him last night in the 8 o'clock hour. Wanted to replay that interview for you guys here today. So we'll play that here coming up late in the 6 o'clock hour, maybe even into the 7 o'clock hour, depending on what happens there. If you have a question, you have a comment, concern, whatever it might be, feel free to send us a message. 913-586-7965. We'll be sure to read those messages throughout the show tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. Speaking of fun, Major League Baseball, like I said, has sort of officially yet unofficially begun. For two Major League Baseball teams, their seasons have started. For the other 28, they're still going through spring training. The Dodgers and Cubs were battling it out today in Tokyo, Japan. If you were one of those true baseball purists who was up at 5:15 this morning to watch this baseball game, I applaud you. I am admittedly not one of those people. I did not wake up at the crack of dawn and sit down in front of my television to watch the Dodgers and the Cubs play baseball. But they did, taking on, you know, Dodgers, Cubbies in this one. Again, like I said, it's a part of the Tokyo series taking place in Japan. Specifically, I'm trying to remember the name of the ballpark. I think it's the Tokyo Dome, I think is where they played it. Yeah, the Tokyo Dome, in front of an announced attendance of 42,365 people. And surprise, surprise, the defending champion Dodgers get the win. 4-1, Yoshinobu Yamamoto went 5 innings, gave up just 1 earned run, got the first win of the Major League Baseball season. Shota Imanaga went 4 innings for the Cubs, however, didn't qualify for the win. He went 4 scoreless in the game. And unfortunately for the Cubs, things devolved once he left the game. Ben Brown came in and pitched 2 2/3, giving up 4 runs, 3 of them earned, or excuse me, 3 runs, 2 of them earned. He gave up 4 hits. He walked 3. He struck out 5. Blah. Not a great performance there from Brown. And then from there, it was just kind of the Dodgers game. Their bullpen was phenomenal, pitching a combined 4 scoreless innings, including Tanner Scott and Trinian. The highlights for the Dodgers in this game, Shohei Ohtani batting leadoff, went 2 for 5. Tommy Edman had a 1 for 5 day, but drove in an RBI. Teoscar Hernandez was 1 for 4. Will Smith went 1 for 2 with 3 walks. Max Muncy drew 2 walks. Andy Pajes went 0 for 2, but also drew 2 walks. So a big one there for the Dodgers. Game 2 of the Tokyo series, I believe, is tomorrow, would be my assumption. It'll be another 5:10 a.m. start Central Time. If you're interested in watching that, projected starters, Roki Sasaki, the 23-year-old, will be going for the Dodgers. At least that's the projections right now, according to ESPN. And for the Cubs, it's projected to be Justin Steele. Sasaki is a Japan native. So you had Yamamoto going today for the Dodgers. You'll have Sasaki going tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. Royals were not in action today in spring training. JT, you got to look. What's the look on your face?
Well, I think the MLB did it wrong.
Okay, let me hear about it.
Because I think they should have had the Tokyo series start tomorrow morning and have it tomorrow morning and Thursday or tomorrow morning and then would be Friday morning, correct? Or no, Thursday morning.
Thursday morning, right. Yeah, would be game 2.
Yeah, exactly. And then guess what? You have the game of the Tokyo series, and then you get right into the March Madness. It would have worked perfectly. People get up, watch March Madness right after a baseball game. The MLB did it wrong. Not only do you have the season start at 5:10 in the morning, but you don't even put it on a day where you can then go from one sport to March Madness where people would actually get up to watch the baseball game.
I don't disagree with you. I think that if you would have put it on you'd have put it as a, and I don't know, they might, is it a 3-game series in Tokyo, or just the 2 games? Okay. So with it just being 2 games, yeah, I understand your point. That Thursday morning start, if you would have done it Wednesday, Thursday, then you would have gotten the more casual baseball fan to maybe consider it. I don't think it would have shifted things all that much. You wouldn't have gotten another 2 or 3 or 4 million people to tune in and watch this baseball game. I'm not sure you would have got another 500,000 people to tune in and watch that baseball game. The folks who are going to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning, depending on which time zone you're in, they were already going to be tuned in, right? I mean, there were Dodgers fans on the West Coast today who were up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Are we sure they were up? Are we sure they woke up, or they just stayed up the whole time and they were like, you know what, we're not going to go to
probably
sleep?
Probably a combination of both, I would tend to say, depending on, you know, what your day-to-day looks like as somebody living out on the West Coast. So those folks were already going to be watching. You already had people waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning in Chicago who are going to be watching this game. I think the only thing that maybe you could sway it, if you're a Major League Baseball, you know, front office person, or if you're Commissioner Rob Manfred, is, okay, if we would have done it Wednesday, Thursday, then you would have gotten the casual baseball fan in the Kansas City or Cincinnati or Tampa Bay markets to potentially tune in and watch a game that really has no implication on them whatsoever. So I don't know how much it would have swayed the bottom line for Major League Baseball, but I think it's a cool idea. I don't want to see them do it all the time. I think that the NFL is quickly approaching a territory of having too many international games, because all you're doing is taking away ticket sales for your core fan base of football fans in the United States. And I get what the point is, right? They're trying to expand the game of football and whatever else. And I get it on the surface, but it's like, do you really want to put an NFL team in Brazil? Like, does Sao Paulo make the most sense? Do you really want to put an NFL team in Barcelona? Do you really want to put an NFL team in Australia? You want the New York Jets to have to go to Australia to play
the Australian kangaroos.
The Melbourne Dingoes on a noon kickoff game on a Sunday, which would actually be like a Saturday late afternoon or whatever it is.
Do not tempt them.
Yeah, they're playing a Sunday afternoon game on a Monday morning, basically. I don't know if I like that. So I get what Major League Baseball is trying to do, especially with these two teams, with Shota Imanaga and Yoshinobu Yamamoto going for the Dodgers and Cubs today. You've got Shohei Ohtani, who's the best player in Major League Baseball. Asaka, the kid going for the Dodgers tomorrow. All of those guys are Japanese-born players. it makes sense because Japan has become a much larger part of the fabric of the game of baseball than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I'll tell you why.
I was going to say Ohtani, but...
Well, I'll give you a reason why you have an Ohtani now.
Why is that?
One word. Ichiro.
Oh, okay. Ichiro. Yeah, Ichiro. Heck yeah.
Ichiro Suzuki changed the perception of Asian-born baseball players and has allowed them to become much more common in today's day and age of Major League Baseball. And so, yeah, you go out to Japan and you do those things. My question is, why aren't you going to Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic or, you know, look at the, I mean, the Royals have so many Venezuelan-born players on their roster. I mean, why are we not going to Central and South America at the same time, Major League Baseball? Why is Tokyo where we're going now? Oh, because Shohei Ohtani's the face of Major League Baseball nowadays. So that's the first big news story of the day across the sports world. The second is that March Madness is underway. Yes, I know it's the first four. Is it still the NCAA tournament? Yes, and we can still enjoy it. Does it have any ramification on your bracket whatsoever? No.
Possibly.
And unless you're one of those people that really goes and like you do the first four games. Like we used to do that in my family brackets growing up where you did every game. You had to correctly predict first four games, which is so hard. Like, could you imagine sitting down and trying to get into the weeds of the St. Francis, Alabama State game that's going on currently? I don't know anything about these guys.
I know they Alabama State lost to Mizzou. That's about it.
Alabama State, yeah. And San Francisco, who is 16-17, they got into the NCAA tournament with a losing record.
Which their mascot is amazing, the Friar. I mean, it looks better than the, what, Providence is the Friar, right? Is Providence the Friar? I don't even know.
Yes, yeah. Providence, they're the Friars. Yeah. Yes, which I'm not going to sit here and act like I am some, you know, religious expert, but yeah, I believe a Friar is... It's some sort of religious component within, like, I think it's the Catholic Church.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know that for certain. But I think that has something to do with it. Every time I hear the name Friar, I just think of Friar Tuck from the animated Peter Pan, and that's where my brain goes every time. But it is going on. St. Francis out of Pennsylvania and Alabama State are playing right now, and I'm sitting here dogging St. Francis for having a losing record and being in the NCAA tournament. They're winning right now. They're beating Alabama State. 27-23, and looking at the leading scorers in the game, Valentino Pinedo for St. Francis. The Red Flash is what they're called, apparently. And then you've got Alabama State, who's the Hornets. Pinedo's got 11 points on 4 of 5 shooting.
Well, that's a good one. They're also sick. They've made their last 6 out of 7 shots. It just said on my screen. So there you go.
Hey, they're off to a hot start, but Alabama State just hit a 3, made it 27-26. And
how
then,
do
of
you
course,
know that? I've got it on a TV in here, and it's still 27-23, and Alabama State don't even have the ball. That's crazy.
Well, because you're on delay. It's on television, so you're watching a delay. I've got it up on my feed on my computer where I'm getting live stats as they occur, so I'm sure you're going to see a 3-pointer by Alabama State
yeah,
here coming
did.
Up.
I
okay,
just did it, yeah.
I'm just shortly after what I'm seeing on my screen is when you'll see it in real time. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, right in the final hour of our show here, Robin Hood, not Peter Pan. I'm sorry. Yes, it was Robin Hood. Somebody in the text line just corrected me. Friar Tuck was Robin Hood. I apologize. That's on me. The other game we've got going on tonight at 8:10 is the 11 seed play-in in the South region between San Diego State and the least deserving team in maybe the history of the NCAA tournament, the North Carolina Tar Heels. And I talked about it a little bit yesterday, but JT, I know you and I were talking about it in the bullpen prior to the show. Just a miscarriage of justice. Just a despicable level of behavior from the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. And whether they're going to admit it or not, because they aren't, because it's the NCAA, as we all know, the reason why North Carolina got into the field of 68 is 100% because their athletic director is the chairman of the committee. He
also,
is the head of the committee.
North Carolina.
Right.
Like, if you just took away the name and you put up there Mizzou, Like Missouri. They're not putting Missouri in with that record. Nah, but North Carolina, they're a blue blood. They're a staple to this college basketball phenom. Let's put them in there and let's give them San Diego State, which I think is going to lose to North Carolina. So everyone's going to be like, well, we told you so. North Carolina won. Look at that. I don't care if they win. They shouldn't be there. It should have been West Virginia.
Yes, it should have been West Virginia. It should have been a handful of other teams before it was North Carolina. There's no rhyme or reason to it. North Carolina had one quad one win the entire year. One. They were 1-12 in 13 combined quad one opportunities this season. Gross.
You want to hear something crazy? I don't know if you've heard this. They only beat two tournament teams, and one of them was America, who is a 16 seed. They beat two tournament teams, and one was America.
Ugh. Yeah, they have eight wins since February 15th. All eight of those wins have come against teams who were outside of the top 65 of the net rankings. So, yeah, having two total wins against NCAA tournament teams is just deplorable. And you look, there were some really bad snubs last year. Like, I thought that St. John's and Seton Hall should have gotten in last season. West Virginia has the biggest gripe in the world right now. And now they have had insult added to injury. Things have gone from bad to worse for the West Virginia men's basketball program. And we'll talk about that story next. Again, 913-586-7965. Someone said to watch the Wichita State NIT game in protest instead of watching North Carolina getting in over West Virginia. It's not a bad idea.
Did you hear about Wichita State, though?
No.
Yeah, so they didn't know they were in the NIT, so they haven't practiced a single practice before this game because they didn't realize they were in the NIT.
How do you not know you're in the NIT?
That's what I couldn't believe. Yeah, the coach was like, yeah, we didn't know we were in the NIT, so we haven't had a practice since we lost our last game.
Oh, man. Dude, the NIT is having a rough go of it right now because you've got the situation with, apparently, Wichita State had no idea they were even in the NIT. And then you've got this crazy story with South Alabama where they're sitting there and they don't know what they're going to do with their postseason tournament, right? They get an invite from the commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference in Keith Gill and the senior vice president of basketball in Dan Gavitt. Of course, his dad's Dave Gavitt, who created the Big East. And they extended South Alabama an invite to the National Invitation Tournament. That was late on Sunday. An hour later, the NIT pulls the invitation. After they had outright accepted it, they pulled the invitation because apparently there was some miscommunication going on with a different school.
Yeah, it was UC Riverside. Yes. Because they were also, and I think it was the CBI tournament or another tournament, and everyone was like, man, they're really going to play their extra games because they're playing in both tournaments.
Yeah, so they had accepted the CBI invite and then got the NIT invite, declined the CBI, and took the NIT invitation, unbeknownst to South Alabama, who did not know that the invitation they had received was basically hey, we're going to put it out to two teams. Whoever accepts first, I just don't understand, dude. I absolutely do not understand how that works. The NIT is having a rough go, but all these tournaments are having a rough go. Somebody said in the text line, UNC and the tourney is the equivalent of Bronny taking a roster spot in the NBA.
I think it's worse, actually. UNC.
I think it's worse.
Yeah.
I personally think it's worse. I think Bronny's got some promise. Do I expect him to be an all-star? No. I don't, but
he's just got so much like pressure on him that everyone's like, hey, you got to be like your dad. UNC, like, this is a whole debacle. Not Bronny. Bronny's not a debacle.
No,
UNC is a debacle.
And he's not getting 20, 25 minutes a night. He's on a two-way deal. He's bouncing back and forth between the G League and, And he's put up some good numbers in the G League. So I don't know. I mean, in a spot taken, you know, in when you need him to, if he's the 13th, 14th guy on the roster, okay, so be it. I think this is an even worse situation. Somebody in the text line asked, do you think these Royals will be even better than last year? That's an interesting question, and I'll talk about that coming up here in just a little bit. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside JT Noah, your home for Kansas City sports.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just before we hit the break, somebody in the text line, which our number is 913-586-7965, had asked, do you think these Royals will be even better than last year? And somebody else said, if the Royals had the exact same season they had last year, I'd call it a success. I have a hard time answering this because I think the Royals will be as good, if not better, than last year's team. But I actually think they'll have a worse record. I see this Royals team finishing somewhere around 86 wins, which is going to put them right on the bubble of a wild card spot. And I think a lot of it has to do with the rest of the division. The Twins are still going to be solid. They're going to be somewhere between 76 and 82. You've got the Detroit Tigers, who I think are improving quickly and have got some really good young prospects. They made some offseason moves. I think they're a team that hovers anywhere between 80 and 86 wins. You've got the Cleveland Guardians, which I think are like an 86 to a 92 win team. The division in the AL Central is solid again. And when I look at the Royals and I look at what they did this offseason, I don't think they did enough to sway things. You traded Brady Singer for Jonathan India, which I think was a great move. I am a fan of that decision because it gives you somebody in the leadoff spot that you can rely on to get on base more so than anything, right? He's not going to hit 20 home runs. He's not going to drive in 80 RBIs. That's not what you want out of a leadoff hitter. He's going to hit 250, 260. He's going to have a 340, 350 on base. He's a career 350 on base percentage guy, meaning he is getting on base over a third of the time that he arrives at the plate. That's fantastic. That's what you want.
Especially when Bobby's right behind
exactly. you. Exactly. That's what you want out of a leadoff hitter. When Bobby's hitting second and you've got Vinny hitting third and you've got Salvador Perez hitting fourth. The problem is 5 through 9 doesn't do it for me. You didn't answer the question in right field. Hunter Renfro has been better. I mean, he's been decent enough during this spring training, but will that translate to the regular season? I don't know. MJ Melendez has been up and down throughout the spring. Will that continue into the regular season? Who knows, right? You know that Kyle Isbell is not going to all of a sudden become a 260, 270 hitter in the bottom half of your order. He's there because of his glove. Mikel Garcia and he are going to be doing this little like platoon system in center field. Michael Massey, who had a good year last year, he's going to be a utility of sorts. He's going to play some right. He's going to play some third. He's going to play some left. He's going to play some second. But is he going to be able to play every day as a utility player? We know about the back problems that he's had throughout his career. Is that going to prevent him from being a guy that can play in 120, 130 or more games this season? That's a huge question mark. The bullpen is better than at this time last year. That is not debatable. When you look at the acquisition of Hunter Harvey, who's now healthy, you traded for Ursig at the deadline last year, and he became a huge piece of your roster. You signed Carlos Estevez during the offseason, which I think was a great move. Those three guys, along with Sam Long and some of the other pieces from this Royals team that were good in the bullpen last year, I love what the Royals' pen looks like in high-leverage spots in the 6th, 7th, and 8th, and even in the 9th innings. I love that. The problem is, for me, the biggest issue, and somebody just said it in the text line, I just don't think that you're going to get the same production out of your starting pitching rotation. Do I think that Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha are going to suddenly fall off a cliff in terms of their production? No, I don't think so. But are we really expecting Seth Lugo to finish as the runner-up for the American League Cy Young Award again? I don't see it. Do we really expect Michael Wacha to have a sub-3.5 ERA and to have a sub-3 ERA after the All-Star break the way he did last year? I don't see it. Right? You got Michael Lorenzen as the four in your rotation, and that's great if he's healthy, but we saw him get banged up last year. Is that sustainable? Chris Bubich is probably your number five starter right now, but he's got a history of injuries. Is that sustainable? Daniel Lynch is kind of that flex guy of if somebody goes down, he then slides into that number five starting spot in the rotation. He's got an injury history. I mentioned Lugo and Wacha. They're not getting any younger, right? One or two injuries to this rotation can have a catastrophic impact on this team as a whole. Even a small one, even a 15-day IL appearance for somebody like Lugo or Wacha or Cole Reagans could lead to a tough 2 or 3 week stretch for the Royals, especially if a rehab stint is attached to the end of that IL. I'm just concerned that the Royals, at least by in terms of their pitching, were very, very beneficial. Very beneficial. It was extremely beneficial for them, excuse me, that they were able to stay as healthy as they did outside of Lorenzen, right? They stayed very, very healthy, especially 1 through 4 with Reagans, Wacha, Lugo, and Brady Singer. Now you no longer have Brady Singer. Lorenzen goes from your 5 to your 4 and Bubich slides in. I just don't know if you can stay as healthy. And then, of course, you look at the offense. If Vinny Pasquantino can play a full season, great. I'm not the most confident person in the world when it comes to that. I love Vinny Pasquantino as a player. But Vinny has injury history. A lot of it, unfortunately. And some of it was fluke things, right? I don't know if it's a lot of like chronic injuries and things like that. Or he got hit in the hand, broke his hand, whatever. That happens. So it's not a thing where I think the Royals are going to be are a worse baseball team than they were last year, because I don't think that that's true. I just think that they were very, very lucky in terms of their overall health last season, especially their starting pitching. And I just don't know if that's going to be the same case this year. I think that they're a team that wins 86, maybe up to 88 games, and they're in contention for maybe that second or third wild card spot, because I believe one of either the Baltimore Orioles or the New York Yankees will run away with the first wild card spot, even despite Gerrit Cole missing the majority, you know, all of this season and even into next year, and you're going to be without Luis Gill for a while. The Yankees lineup 1 through 9 will drive in a ton of runs. They'll be a team competing for 100 wins. The Orioles will be a team competing for 100 wins. And the Royals are going to be fighting the Twins and the Tigers and even some teams out in the AL West potentially for that second or third wild card spot.
Yeah, so the starting pitching is interesting to me because we talk about injuries and it's like, okay, here's where I think they could have the injuries, but also I think they're going to be all right if they do have an injury, because I'm thinking about it. You go, if say Wacha gets hurt or say Lugo gets hurt, they put on the IR, you still have almost 3 quality starters that you could turn to, because you would have Daniel Lynch, maybe, who's not a starter. Alec Marsh, you forget about Alec Marsh, he's still there. I think he might be in AAA. You could call him up. He could be a reliable starter. Kyle Wright, I know we haven't seen him, but we traded for him and
right.
Coming from Tommy John. So there is that aspect of injury. And knock on wood, last year, until the Vinny injury, we were really good without injuries. So it's kind of worrisome, because you always know, like, uh-oh, injuries are looming and you never know when they're going to hit. And this team is not built for injuries, especially 1 through 4. Like, if there's an injury in the batting lineup, we saw what it did last year. It's going to do the same damage this year as well.
No question about it. It's interesting. You know, I look and yeah, do I think it's the, it's not the most sustainable thing for a long haul of a season, but to eat up a roster spot, to give you run production in limited innings and get you set for a postseason push. Hey, JD Martinez is a free agent right now. Yeah, I know he's old. He's 37. He's coming off a year with the Mets where he only hit 235 with 16 home runs and 69 RBIs, but he still had an on-base percentage of 320.
Could be the Raleigh Banias. You remember Raleigh Banias joining the squad helped kind of get them. He was like the veteran you needed in the clubhouse. He could be a Raleigh Banias for the team.
He certainly could. I mean, it's not like Omar Infante was blowing people's socks off with in Kansas City during those 14 and 15 seasons. So why not? I mean, that's sort of where my head is at in that situation. I mean, look at what Alex Rios did in that same 2015 season with the Royals. He hit 250, 15 homers, 67 RBIs. His OBP was a 287. I like the idea of JD Martinez. If and I agree with the move to not have Jack Caglione be with the major league roster, you need a guy who can, you know, hit the ball a long ways, you know, somebody that can pinch hit in a situation where you've got runners on second and third and one out, and maybe you don't trust the eight hole hitter in that situation. Somebody that can just go get you a deep fly ball to drive in a run when you really, really need it in a crucial spot. I think it could be interesting. And that would change things a little bit, right? I don't think JD Martinez isn't taking the Royals from an 86 win team to a 95 win team, but maybe from 86 to 88 or 89 could shift some things around, and they might need it. They might need a guy like JD Martinez if injuries begin to pile up for this Royals team. And then you can avoid having to call up Jack Caglione before I believe he's ready, at least in terms of his fielding. Or you give Gavin Cross a little bit more time in the minors to get more confident with his bat to go along with his outstanding field work out in left, center, or right field, depending on where you want to put him. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a break here real quick, come back, and read some of your messages that you've got here on our text line after hours with Logan Weber alongside my producer JT Noah. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight here on 96.5 The Fan.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside JT Noah, 913-586-7965, talking Kansas City Royals. A little bit ago, somebody asked if I thought the Royals would be better this year than they were last year. And my answer was, I think that they'll be a better team, but I think they'll have a worse record. I don't think you'll have the same amount of luck in terms of injuries. I think we might see a slight regression from Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha. They're a year older, and they put up career years. I mean, Seth Lugo last year was the runner-up for the AL Cy Young, something we did not see coming. And you don't have as much depth in your rotation. You traded Brady Singer for Jonathan India, which I think was a good move, but it leaves you a little bit shorthanded in terms of what you want in your rotation. You were so solid 1-4 last year, and now you're solid 1-3, and then you've got questions with Lorenzen and Chris Bubich or Daniel Lynch or Kyle Wright, whoever that number 5 starter ends up being for the majority of the year. Somebody in the text line, a 660, says, still feels like they're a year, maybe two, from being a real contender and not just a nice story. And I would agree with that. When you look at the overall makeup of this roster with Cole Reagans and Bobby Witt Jr., obviously, and Vinny Pasquantino, and some of the other young pieces, right? When Jack Caglione is finally up with the Major League Club, when Gavin Cross has his legs underneath him at the dish, I think they've got some quality pieces. They've got great young starting pitching down in their minor league system. Guys like Blake Mitchell and others at the catcher spot who could become big-time prospects in future seasons. It's going to be a fascinating one to watch. Again, 913-586-7965 is our number. I'm trying to see. Da-da-da-da-da. Somebody said going 12-1 against the White Sox too. People keep forgetting that. Yeah, you benefit from having a team that bad in that division. Somebody else mentioned last year we beat three teams in our division as far as head-to-head. That will not happen this year. I mean, it's going to be harder to win the head-to-head against the Tigers because I think they're a better team than they were a year ago. It's going to be hard to win the head-to-head against the Twins. Albeit, I think the Twins didn't do a lot to move the envelope for them. The White Sox are still going to be terrible, but even despite being a terrible baseball team, going 12-1 against a specific opponent, no matter who it is an incredible feat. So, yeah, man, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see. Real quick, somebody in the text line was asking about Kareem Hunt. What if Kareem Hunt had played an entire season? He may have had more yards than James Cook did. I don't know, maybe that comment came from an earlier show and it just popped up in the text line for some reason. Maybe. Or Kareem Hunt would have ended up really banged up because he was dealing, I mean, when the Chiefs brought him on, they were giving him so many touches and he had to he was vocal, hey, I need you to limit my production because I'm playing a little bit hobbled right now. So if he plays a full season, does he get to 1,000 yards? Maybe. But the reason why he was there in the first place is because Pacheco got hurt. If he would have been there week one, Pacheco would have been the starter. So if you would Kareem Hunt with a full season as a starter, yeah, he could have had good production. He might have had 1,000 yards and double-digit rushing touchdowns.
Do you understand what they're doing with the running back room? Because I'm confused with what they're doing to the running back room.
I'm ultra confused, man. I think they're trying to hedge their bets, sort of a better safe than sorry approach, where they bring on Elijah Mitchell as that proverbial quote-unquote third down back. You've got, at least for the time being, you've got Kareem Hunt as your power back, your third and short, fourth and short goal line situation back, and then Pacheco is your first and second down guy. But again, I am of the belief that the Chiefs should and will take a running back.
They should, yeah. I still think they do, but it's weird. Now you're going to have, five running backs in your room? Because you got Steele, Hunt, Pacheco, Mitchell, and then a draft. That would be five.
Yeah, I hate to be the one to tell you this.
You can tell me Steele's not a running back?
Carson Steele's not he's not a running back. He's a fullback.
Okay.
And with all that in mind, the Chiefs don't use fullbacks. I don't think Carson Steele is on this roster next year.
Okay. No offense to Carson Steele. Think he's got a cool story, a crocodile, whatever. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if he's not on the roster.
I don't think Carson Steele is on this roster next year. And I think one or the other of Kareem Hunt, Elijah Mitchell, one of those two is not on this roster next year either.
Who would you prefer to have?
Right now, I would prefer to have Kareem Hunt. And I say that because the Chiefs, I don't know what their draft philosophy is in terms of a running back. If your philosophy is to try to get an Amarion Hampton or a Travion Henderson or a Quinshon Judkins, which is not likely to happen because for some reason Brett Veach and the Chiefs have I don't think they've drafted a single Ohio State guy. Like since Veach took over as the GM, they have not drafted a single player from Ohio State or maybe one. Like it's a strange sort of thing. As good as Ohio State football has been and is currently. So I don't know if you get an Amarion Hampton, then yeah, you can let Kareem go and run with Elijah Mitchell as your quote unquote third down back, your receiving guy and your gadget player in certain sets. But if you decide that, you want to go with even a DJ Giddens or a Bashul Tutton, somebody in the later rounds, you want to hit on a back in round 3, early round 4, or whatever it might be, then maybe you keep Kareem Hunt around, you let Elijah Mitchell go, and then that guy is your quote-unquote third down back for his rookie year, which honestly I would not be a fan of because I think the Chiefs need a three down back. I don't think Isaiah Pacheco is that guy. I just don't.
Yeah, you've told me that for a long time, that you want a three down back. You don't think Pacheco's a three down back. And I see it. I also think they're going to, no matter if they get a running back in the draft, they're going to run Pacheco no matter what because they're going to use up his contract and wear and tear on him until he's gone.
I think there's something to be said for that, but I don't think he's the most efficient or productive back. That's just my feeling on it. I think he's great in outside zone. When you get him outside the tackles and you allow him to get in space one-on-one, he utilizes his physicality and his running style. But in between the tackles, he leaves a lot to be desired, I would say. He's not the most patient runner. He doesn't wait for things to develop, wait for holes to open. And let's face it, he was drafted in the seventh round for a reason, right? There were things that are missing from Isaiah Pacheco's game. And this running back class is so incredibly deep that I think you could hit on a guy in the third or fourth round that could really make waves for this Chiefs team for years to come. But we'll wait and see. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody just asked, there's no way that you believe we're going 86 and 76. I'm going to ask for further clarification on that, and once I have it, I will explain myself further on the other side of the break here on After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, producer for tonight, JT Noah, your home for Kansas City sports. Will the Royals win 86 or more games or less games? That's the question. Somebody in the text line a little bit ago said, there's no way you believe we're going 86 and 76. So I clarified. I said, well, do you think they'll have more wins or less? And this person responded with, I think this team goes at least 89 and 73 with the ceiling being 92 plus wins. They said, think about it. The reason we lost so many games last year was because of the bullpen, which I do not disagree with. Yes, the bullpen was a major issue for the Royals last year. They have clarified a lot of those issues with trading for Urcig, having Hunter Harvey healthy. Sam Long's going to be back after a good year last year, and you picked up Carlos Estevez in free agency. The problem is the starting pitching for the Royals was so good and so healthy last year, I just don't think it can be the same. I do not expect Seth Lugo to go out and have the kind of year that he had last year. I don't expect Seth Lugo to go 16-9 with a 3 ERA again. I don't expect Michael Wacha to go 13-8 with a 3.35 ERA again. You no longer have Brady Singer and the 3.71 ERA that he had last year. So your starting pitching rotation is different. I don't expect Lugo and Wacha to have the same kind of year. And frankly, there's guys in the lineup. I'm sorry. Is it reasonable to assume that Salvador Perez is going to hit 270 with nearly 30 home runs and 100 RBIs again? He's 35 years old. It's hard for me to look at guys like Lugo and Wacha and Salvi. And Freddie Fermin was great last year, like 270 himself last year. Played in 100 games plus and hit 270. Michael Massey was incredibly effective in the 100 games that he played in, hitting almost 260. Is that sustainable? I just don't know, man. And how much higher can Bobby Witt's ceiling get? I mean, he hit 330 last year. He had 32 home runs, 109 RBIs. He stole 30 bases. He had an MVP year.
And didn't win it.
Can he get that much better? Is Bobby Witt Jr. going to hit 340 with 35 homers and 120 RBIs this year? Is he going to have an on-base percentage that approaches 420? I just don't understand. I don't know. And I look at the other guys. I don't expect Mikel Garcia to make a big leap. I don't expect Kyle Isbell to make a big leap. If Hunter Renfro can be a little bit better than he was last year, maybe. He said they don't need to. Pitching wins championships. But I just mentioned pitching. The pitching that I'm referencing with Lugo and Wacha, I don't think it's going to be as good as it was last year. That's just my feeling on it. if Waka can manage a 3.5 ERA and Lugo can, or excuse me, if Lugo can manage a 3.5 or a 3.4 ERA and Waka is somewhere around, you know, 3.5 or 3.6, I think that's great. And that's what we should expect, because Waka and Lugo, I think, shocked people last year with what they brought to the table. I'm just not the most confident person in the world that they can replicate it again this season. Maybe that makes me a pessimist. I wish I shared your level of optimism in this Royals team. I just don't. I just don't have it right now.
And Perez is, like you said, going up on the age. We've seen Travis Kelce. His performance has declined. Sooner than later, Salvi is going to see the production go down because of the age. Baseball is a hard sport. It's especially when you're the catcher. So I'm anticipating a little bit of a drop-off this year, and whether or not Vinny can pick it up on that end, we'll see. But I'm with you. 86 wins, if you gave me a line right now of 80, say 86 and a half more or less wins, I would probably take the less part.
And it's interesting, right? If you look over, you look at an overview of history, there have been 14 teams since 1969 that have won 27 more games than they had the previous year. 27 or more games year over year. Of those 14, only two of them had had their record improved the following year. So of the 14 teams to have won 27 or more games year over year, that following season, that third year, only two of them had a better record than they did the second season.
Can I ask, was one of them the Royals?
No, the 1991 Braves and the 2023 Orioles.
For some reason, I thought it was the Royals that the year, the first year they made the playoffs and then they did it again.
No, because they won, I think they won like 80 games in 2012 or 2013. Okay. And then in 14, they won, you know, there was a marked improvement. They went from like 60 to 68 to, you know, year over year, it bumped a little bit, but
yeah,
it wasn't
they were climbing the ladder.
Yeah, it wasn't a drastic year over year. It's only happened twice out of the 14 occurrences since 1969 that a team got better the third year than they were the second year in that stretch, man. I just don't see it. Somebody said, stop with all the negative. We're going to win the division 91 and 71. I hope you're right.
I would love to be wrong about this. We're not saying we want this to happen. We're just going with what we feel and what history kind of shows.
Yes. I think that this team is a year older. You've got veterans like Lugo and Waka who are going to begin to lose production. Salvi's going to begin to lose production. Guys like Massey and Fermin, who were so good last year, can they continue to do that? And can they stay healthy? Injuries can riddle a team, and they can absolutely stop your momentum in its tracks, and that could be the case for the Royals this year.
And who
Let's
knows? What about the bullpen? You never know. They might figure out Urseg, and they might figure out Hunter Harvey, and then you're like, uh-oh. Like, you never know what's going to happen. You
right.
get 1 year of seeing Hunter Harvey show up on the big screen, and you're like, okay, well, we now know his tendencies. Let's see what we can do with it. No, I'm not saying that, but his sinker is nasty. We'll see what they can do. I'm just saying it could happen.
It definitely could. 913-586-7965 is our number. A lot more to get to here, including massive news in the college basketball men's, specifically, head coaching ranks that could have some major implications across college, the landscape of college basketball. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah, your home for Kansas City sports.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.